This is Chris Atwood of The Alternative on 95.9 WATD. We're joined live from Wales with Mike and Jules Peters. Mike and Jules, welcome to the video show and eventually the radio show as well.
Nice to be on all the platforms at once.
I'm really intrigued. Here we all are around the world, stuck indoors. You call it lockdown. We stay safe at home. And you came up with a really, I think, unique idea, and you see a lot of artists doing this. Tell me about The Big Night In. What was the inspiration for that? And how many weeks have you been doing The Big Night In at this point?
Well, we're coming up to our eighth week of running it, and it was pretty off-the-cuff idea of Jules, really, to host an evening. I was thinking, oh, well, we'll play a few songs. There was a lot of fans asking if we'd play, and I think Chris Martin was one of the first from Coldplay to actually do something. We saw that, and we saw Bono singing for the Italians, like a new song on his Instagram, and we just felt like, hey, we've got some idea of maybe using the technology to create a TV show style format and have video content, music. I was a little bit wary of the sound that people can get straight down the internet because of all the compression and very difficult. So I thought we could break it up.
It's been a stressful 7 weeks.
And chat. And I'm lucky that not many people have a presenter living in home.
But also, we were supposed to be on tour. I think that's the main thing to point out, that on the Friday night that in the UK we went into lockdown, we were due to be on stage at the Ritz in Manchester. And so you can imagine a lot of the British Alarm fans were completely devastated by everything that's going on, and then to not be able to come to the show. So I just started sort of going, what can we do? And initially, it wasn't even clear that we were in lockdown. We all know around the world how sort of quickly it arrived. I'd originally thought maybe we could find a little venue for Mike and that we'd just record it without an audience. That was my original idea. And then it became over, as the hours were speeding by, it was obvious that none of us were going anywhere. So I thought, let's just do something around our house. You know, we've just recently had a documentary by the BBC. Both Mike lives with leukemia, and I've recently gone through breast cancer. So I think normally we're quite private about where we live, and I would never have dreamt of doing this a few years ago. But because we sort of let this camera crew into our house, that quite we were both, I guess, very vulnerable. We agreed to let them come in and film us at home. That it's actually everybody's seen where we live. Everybody knows the inside of our house from top to bottom. So I thought, well, maybe it'd be nice to bring someone to the sofa. And I asked Mike what he thought, and we got our tour manager. Our poor tour manager has been thrown into this role of being the director from his house just outside Manchester in Bury. And we have worked flat out. I mean, no word of a lie, it has been a very intense 7 weeks, but I would say it's kept the fans strong. It's kept you know, people in the community tune in. It's kept us strong. It's kept us disciplined. It's kept us focused. We are tired. We'd love a day off. But, you know, you can't, as you know, doing your shows. Yeah. It's all about researching and putting content together. And I think
we've had great fun
doing it.
We've
enjoyed it.
I think we got lucky as well that the week before the lockdown got imposed in the UK, Jules and I both were committed to playing a show because of a lot of floods that had happened in South Wales. We played an event called Valley Aid with James Dean Bradfield, the Manic Street Preachers, and other really well-known artists. And
Amy Wodge,
who writes all the songs with Ed Sheeran. She was playing.
She lives in Nashville, and she lives in
Wales. So it was great. It was a great event. Andy Fairweather Lowe was there, who's Eric Clapton's guitar player as well. And it was a brilliant event. And Jules ended up being the presenter. And because of the lockdown, because they couldn't let everyone into the venue that they hoped they could, they put it out on the internet. And we had a little sneaky preview of how we could maybe work things ourselves from seeing that happen. And that sort of set us off on the right path, I think.
So in many ways, you guys have been on tour at home for 8 weeks.
I think it's more exhausting being at home doing it because we're also thrown in the mix, have two young boys aged when we're on tour, we usually come to your wonderful country during the summer holidays, and we bring the kids and the band, and we all travel on this tour bus, and we have an amazing time. We're really missing, you know, obviously we should have been in Boston a couple of weeks ago, but when we're on tour with the kids, we put them to work, so they get involved with the crew, they bring the gear in, they sell the shirts, they're all... they figure out that some of the American fans like to tip them if they'll go and get dad to sign the stuff. Yeah. We have nothing to do with that. So yeah, right. On tour, it's a different set of circumstances. Here, we have to teach them as well. And so Mike's a lovely dad, but he's not the strictest of teachers. So I've tried it a few times.
So, I do remember seeing them in last week's episode. I think they were wearing like a stormtrooper helmet going.
Yeah, Star Wars.
Whatever, yeah.
Star Wars thing, yeah.
I hope you saw your photograph, Chris, in the beginning.
I was looking for it. I didn't see it, but I was probably turning around to get a beer somewhere. So.
Yeah.
That's good. I'll send you the link.
Because that'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, just for the viewers who are tuning in, we put the word out for all the Alarm fans to send in their photograph and to say, hold up an A4 and say where they're from, hashtag Big Night In. And we just had this like deluge of lots of emails and different alarm stories. I love hearing everyone's different alarm story, you know. And Chris sent an email and explained his story and his connection with the alarm. So I just managed to get the photograph. We did a little sort of gallery of all the photos against some music that our son played a trip on the guitar. So I'll send it to you so you can see it.
So for the my listeners and I guess viewers, if they wanted to send a photo, you know, holding a sign about Big Night In, is there an email that they send that to or a website?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love you to do that. So all you need to do is send a photograph of yourself. If you're not that tech savvy, just hold a piece of A4, write your name in big black marker pen, who you are. I'm Chris, I'm from Boston, hashtag Big Night In. And then we will feature you on the show just to see the vast range of how far the show is going out.
Yeah, and you send it to the alarmcalling@mac.com email.
There'll be thousands of those coming in.
Great.
That would be great. We'd love to hear your stories.
Jules can sit through them all.
I was really fascinated when I saw the show a few weeks ago. Again, I'm so happy through social media being stuck. I probably would have learned about it, but it would have taken a while. The movie Vinyl. So we watched The Big Night In, and then that night, well, we had nothing else to do, so we watched Vinyl, and that was a great movie. So tell me a little bit about that movie and how that came together.
Well, it was rooted in an escapade we were involved in 2004, when the alarm were coming back to life, and we created a fake band to front things out, and we created a fake band called The Poppy Fields, and we had young musicians appear in the alarm video, and we passed the whole thing off to the media, and it became a huge hit record, a massive news story all around the world, and that got to the attention of John H. Williams, who's the producer of Shrek, and they pursued a movie with a writer called Jim Cooper, and it was, so the whole screenplay was fictionalized, but it was based on the story that the alarm had been involved in, and Jules and I ended up having a cameo. It was directed by a British filmmaker called Sara Sugarman, who we knew from the original days of the band when we were called The Toilets. So she had seen us playing in 1977 with The Clash and The Buzzcocks, and asked if I'd recreate that music for the film soundtrack. And then she went and got Phil Daniels from Quadrophenia to play the lead. It was like, wow, this is going to be fantastic.
It was a great movie, yeah. I had heard the song and ended up playing that on my radio show, and a bunch of people called up and they're like, who's that? And I'm like, yes, you know.
Free
so.
Rock and roll, free rock and roll, free rock and roll. Free rock and roll, free rock and roll, free rock and roll. Time for revolution in a living room now. Free rock and roll, cause you can do. Free rock and roll, cause you want to. Free rock and roll, don't be afraid to find the hand that feeds, spit it out.
What can people expect next Friday?
We're not sure because it's quite dynamic. We've got guys from Big Country due to come on the show. Okay. Jules has been going through a diary, and we've got Ian McNabb.
I'm like, all the guys that I really, really like. Hence why we had Steve Norman on from Spandau Ballet and Mark Shaw from Ben Jericho last week. So, yeah, we sit down with a couple of beers and we have a great time, just the two of us going, who do you think? And then we try it. We're learning week by week. You know, it's a massive learning curve for us. Mm-hmm. But no, we try and get it early on. So we decide who we're going to get. Mike has a little
look. I have to go on tour back through the whole of the history of the band. It's like a relive, all these tours or gatherings and all these events going back through the footage. And I do a lot of the editing to put the shows, the video clips together. And
Mike has amazing chronological knowledge of the Alarm. And we own an old chapel. We live in a very tiny village of 2,500 people in North Wales. In the chapel, Mike has collated every single bit of Alarm history. So he just disappears, literally rummages around.
Raiders of the Lost Alarm.
Well, the one thing when I was out in Huntington Beach 2 years ago, and it was classic, and I turned to Richard Blade, and I'm like, I love the line that you, Mike, said at the very end. You said, Huntington Beach, you've just been alarmed. And I was like, that's brilliant. And he's like, that's rock and roll. I'm like, what? And I guess whether...
we've got some great footage of that gig, actually.
I have some on my phone. I've got some.
Great.
I think that's we're used to being quite responsive to situations. We always try and stay fluid and not too set in our ways because you can never predict what's going to happen. You know, and I think...
My eternal punk rocker right here. You know,
And the good thing about the Big Night, it allows us to retell some of the great stories and highlight some of the things that people have missed.
Right.
We have so much going on. And there's a lot of history in the 90s when we didn't have the internet as prevalent as it is today.
Right.
And we lost contact with a lot of our audience, but through shows like yours, Richard Blade, the Big Night Inn, we're reconnecting all the time with people who like the band at a certain point in history.
Right.
And have missed out on so much, and now this connects them to and makes our makes the Alarm very alive for a lot of people. So it's just a great format for us all to allow.
We are missing
the music
America,
to come forward.
Though.
Yeah, we are.
You know, we're half American. We're Welsh American. You know.
There you go. You mentioned about like shows like mine and Richard Blades and other 80s alternative shows that are out there. Being a DJ in college, 85 to 89, to me, that was the heyday. That was, you know, when you guys were out there, you still are. Why do you think there's such a popularity for what I call the 80s alternative sound? Your sound, whether it's U2, Gene Loves Jezebel, it's as strong today, if not stronger, than it was back then. And I'm just curious to know why you think that.
I think when we were making music in the 80s, late 80s, like that period you described, we weren't just making it alone. We were voicing our opinions and our ideas and our enthusiasm through DJs like Carter Allen. They had the freedom then to play the records they liked and they loved. And they could communicate that and, wow, listen to this record. And they maybe play it twice in the day. That created a community of listeners who fell in love with music and the guys who were the outlet for that music. And it brought us all together because we needed the guys like you to get on the radio. The guys like us to make the music. And we needed the audience to listen to it and soak it all up and get involved with it so we could all go to the gigs. And when we played in Boston, BCM was the station or WFNX. They'd come up and introduce the band and we were all in it together. But now it's disparate. When you hear a lot of radio stations that are corporate, there's no voiceover, you can tell that the record has been selected by a program somewhere miles away and there's nothing to do with the moment. And rock and roll is about the moment. And I think the late 80s was the last great moment of rock and roll radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's been the same ever since.
New listeners that are always tuning in every Friday because, well, they're stuck at home. So they're turning around on the dial. And one person called a couple of weeks ago and said, well, how long has your show been on this radio station? And I said, well, 9 years. And he couldn't believe that. And then so many people, to your point, they call me or email me and say, hey, what's your playlist from last night? I never have a playlist. I feel the music. So if I'm playing an alarm song, in the moment, I'm figuring out what my next song is going to be, because I think it's organic that way, and it's kind of like punk. It's just
the best way. You know, if it's raining outside, you throw Rain in the Summertime on. It's responsive to everybody's listening experience as well. It's not preordained, pre-planned,
right. Mapped
out in advance. And I think a lot of people have worked out that radio isn't really about the music anymore. It's about the commercials and what.
Yeah.
Music listeners are intelligent people. They know the real deal. And that's why I think people are switching off radio, because they want radio was the ultimate vehicle for music when it was at its most powerful anyway.
I feel like I live with a DJ, even though he's a musician. From the moment we get up, instead of the kids, you know, turning the music loud, it's interesting to know that it's the dad and the husband who's like, as soon as he's up, he's there busying away with all his vinyl, and then boom, something comes on in the morning. It's always different. I sort of envy Mike for having such an incredible vinyl collection, you know, and it, pretty much every other day some package arrives. How much did you pay for that? And do you really need more vinyl, Mike?
Never have enough vinyl. You can never have enough guitars.
Yeah, I mean, behind me is like a wall of, that's just some of it. It's CDs. Most of those vinyl records are from the 80s. Speaking of albums, you've got a double album coming out. Tell me a little bit about that. When's it coming out? And also, you got a new video too, which is reminds me of Wellfleet, where you guys, but it's obviously, I think you shot that in Wales. So tell me about the double album and the video.
Well, it's an album called Stream, Hurricane of Change, and it's look back into the world of the alarm from late 1986. To 1990, and it covers a trilogy of records that we made called Eye of the Hurricane, Electric Folklore, which is a live record made in Boston, and an album called Change, which came out in 1989. The original records document the change of the decade and the landscape, political environment we're in. It was the end of the industrial era and the move into the information age. And I'm really proud of those records. Although I felt it was such a change in time, and the dynamic of the band was volatile at that time.
Right.
I felt like I wasn't communicating at my best in that time. And when it came to the 30th anniversary of those records, I went back to them. I thought, how can I play these again in the modern era? And I started with, ironically, the first song written off the trilogy of records was the last one to be released on the Change album, but it was the beginning, but you didn't get it till the end. And so I looked at that lyric and thought, well, where was this person going? It was a character in New South Wales, and it was at the end of a cataclysmic time, and he was walking home alone past the church full of mourning souls. I thought, where's he going? Well, he's going into Newtown Jericho, isn't he?
Right.
And then he's going into the eye of the hurricane. He's going to weather the storm of change. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, there was a very autobiographical story revealed in the whole album that I hadn't realised was there in the first place. And so I decided to lay it all out as a different kind of music, a different reading of the lyrics, and created a one-man monologue of a show to go with it, and called it Stream, Hurricane of Change.
Well, and when does the double album come out?
It's intended to be coming out in June to coincide with the tour. I think, you know, again, we're talking about having to think a little bit on our feet at the moment. And we were going to be playing around Record Store Day and all that kind of thing that are all being moved right now. We've already had to move our alarm gatherings, one of them which was going to be at the Wang Theatre Box Centre in Boston.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It was to coincide with the fact that Electric Folklore was being added to Record Store Day through the Celtic Folklore release.
Right.
And we're going to make what was originally a single album in the 80s into a double album for now. And so we happen to sort of look at the situation. So we've made videos for quite a lot of the songs for Stream, Hurricane of Change. We might now, and once the lockdown lifts a little bit, go ahead and make a film for every single song, so we can back up the release with a film sort of cinematic type of environment, a bit like what Pearl Jam did recently. And something we did back in, we had an album out in 2006 called Under Attack, and we made a video for every single song, and it meant people could watch the album as well as listen to it. So we're looking at all those ideas to make the album come alive for people in the US.
Baptized in the fire, raised with eyes to see. I was born by the river of steel, besides the Irish Sea.
The new video that's out, it's called Irish Sea, is in...
That's part of Stream, Hurricane of Change.
Okay.
On the beach at the... Where we live in Rhyl is the sea. I'm not sure. It is called the Irish Sea.
Oh, wow. Okay. And did you film that, Jules, or...?
I'm a cheap camera woman, you see.
I liked it. The very end of it, there's, as you're passing the camera, there's a little wiggle there for the camera. But that was good to leave it in.
Out of the way, I need to get out of the shot.
But it's quite funny living with the hardest working man in rock. We've been together since 1986. But Mike is your eternal punk rocker, and I love being with him. He's always got an idea. But what I love about Mike is he has the idea, and we dream big. Like I say, we sit down a couple of beers, plan what we're going to do. But then the next morning, he's like, right, come on, chop, chop. So that's what happened with that. It was a Sunday. I was at home. I was trying to do something. He just went, oh, Jules, just jump in the car with me, will you? You might need your wellies. And we went down, and he said, what I want you to do, right, is to like get your iPhone, and then I just want you to film me backwards. That's the most exhausting bit of filming I've ever done. We did it a few times. Then we got home, and he realised that it hadn't actually recorded it.
No,
so
we
point.
Had to go do it again.
But we always, you know, we just, we've been very fortunate to live a wonderful rock and roll life, you know, yeah. And people who know us, we've had our
I'm lucky to have a, not only a presenter, but Jules is a great camera woman as well.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the Alarm archive that we have is down to Jules's love of photography, filmmaking.
Oh, okay.
She always encouraged me to get a video camera when they first became available with microphones built into them.
Sure.
We captured a lot of early Alarm touring footage on the road. And I was looking at some footage. Jules and I met in 1986, and you first saw the band in 1987. A year after we'd met, really, and straight away there's footage that Jules started shooting when she came to gigs. So there's some brilliant stuff as backstage and on tour. So I've been looking through that as a nice something that I can share maybe on one of the big night ins that are coming up.
Wow.
I think I'm serious, and I think probably for a lot of girls that are married to musicians, I don't know, for me, right from the moment when I first met Mike, he always said, don't hang out backstage, you know, only bad stuff goes on backstage. You make yourself useful. So I honestly did, you know, and that's why I'm so close to the Alarm fan base, because I listened, I'm 8 years younger than Mike, I listened to what he said, and I didn't stay backstage, and I went out and I chatted to all the Alarm fans. And I think doing photographs and filming was a way of being useful and not just wasting your time. And it stayed with me ever since, you know, and people know that I'm famous for just posting lots and lots of photos. I'm enthusiastic about stuff, you know, that's what it all stems from.
And so for all the fans in the Boston area where this show is from, what message would you have for them, both through this technology, which will also be on radio?
Well, we're going to be coming to Boston before you know it. As soon as we can, we'll be there. We've got a Boston gathering to look forward to that we're
going
to be playing at the Wang Theatre in the Box Centre that is on hold at the moment. And that was going to be a great event. I was going to be able to present the Hurricane and the Change albums in a new modern environment, take people into the auditorium where we recorded Electric Folklore. When Record Store Day comes back around again, we have an album out called Celtic Folklore, which adds on to, it carries on where Electric Folklore left off. So there's a lot to look forward to. And when we were in Boston last year, we had the most amazing gig at the Paradise. I mean, it was...
We
had a great day out, yeah.
Yes.
We went to the Wang Theatre that day, didn't we? To meet all the team and Joe and everyone there. And we had a tour of took some photographs and and we planned what we were going to be doing at the USA Boston gathering, and so it's still pending, and it is going to happen. You know, we're the kind of people that when we say we're going to do something, we do it.
And right. I would like to say that Boston has a massive place in our heart. You know, when Mike was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, we got on a plane and we landed in Boston.
Yeah,
right. And I will never forget landing in the most extreme cold, going to Newbury Street. And
right.
We were both so scared. We didn't know what the future held. But we have a tendency of running to America when things get tough for us. We come over there, and we're lucky to still be here. But when I think of Boston, I think of some dark times, but the amazing fans at all the gigs we played across all our history in Boston, it's yeah. always ignites special happy memories. So thank you to
Boston fans. Boston's yeah. never forgotten the alarm. Boston strong, alarm strong.
All the way.
Wanted to bring the gathering there. You know, the gathering began, for people who don't understand, the gathering was a role reversal whereby we got to stay at home and we invited the fans to pack their bags and to go out on the road. And we've run it for 28 years in North Wales, just behind us, in various places along North Wales.
Right.
But we then decided, we took it to Los Angeles a few years ago, and that was really successful. And then we took it to New York. So a couple of weeks ago, it was our first time. We thought, when we came and played last year, we thought, why don't we bring the gathering here? It seems like a really sensible thing to do. So we are hugely disappointed that we haven't been there. So we're definitely back and doing it.
As soon as we can, we'll be back in Boston.
Looking forward to that. Hopefully, I was at the show back last year at the Paradise. That was phenomenal. And definitely, I'll hope to be at the one, the gathering when it comes back around. Mike and Jules, thanks for coming on to The Alternative through Zoom technology. And we'll have this on the radio.
Having us on the show, Chris, and playing our music and getting our story out there. Really appreciate it.